Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. Today we're going to be talking about actually a number of things, but one of the most significant points of this interview today is going to be related to donating organs. This is something that a lot of people have attitudes about. They get a little queasy about it, but I think that when you hear my guest story today, that may take on a whole different connotation for you if this is something that perhaps you would not choose to do. My guest today is Suzanne Ruff. We're going to be talking about her true story about being the reluctant donor, and this is the title of her book. Suzanne Ruff, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Donna. I'm pleased to be here.
Now, Suzanne, you really, your story in here is quite profound, and I know that in the book, when you sent it to me, you put two words, cherish life. Your story is very poignant, and I was very, very impressed with the first sentence in your book, which is, "What in God's name was I thinking? Why did I tell her I would give her one of my kidneys?" Who was this person, and why did you write the book?
Well, the person was my sister, Joanne. I told her that I would give her one of my kidneys when she was in critical condition in the hospital. I don't know how it, why I said it. I just blurted it out, and I wrote the book so that people would understand about the disease my sister was suffering from. She was in critical condition because of polycystic kidney disease, and that disease has taken many of the people I love best.
Now, this,
and then it started to, it touched into both of my sisters actually have PKD.
Now, let's talk about this disease for a minute. I don't hear a lot about kidney disease, yet a very special member of my family, dear and close to me, went through kidney failure, massive kidney failure, last year. Now, they were able to get everything working, which I'm very grateful for. But let's talk about polycystic kidney disease. Now, its abbreviation is PKD. What is it? And do they have any idea about what the root cause is? It seems to be a genetic patterning because so many of your family members have been affected by it. Give us some background on this disease.
Well, it is a genetic disease, and it's characterized by the occurrence of multiple cysts. Poly means many, so many cysts of varying sizes grow on both of the kidneys. And the cysts are caused by uncontrolled cell proliferation and fluid secretion. So those cysts are benign. They're not, sometimes when you hear of a cyst, you think of a cancerous cyst.
Mm-hmm.
These are just fluid-filled cysts that just multiply like crazy over both kidneys and eventually cause the kidneys to fail.
Oh my!
And you're right, PK. I wrote the book because I was so sick of the question, PK what?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So this is something that historically, does it hit certain groupings of people, like sickle cell often affects black people very strongly, and also I found out sometimes Jewish people as well. Then it depends on the genetics. Does this have any history to it, where they have any
idea? It's very interesting you bring sickle cell anemia up, because most people have heard of that. And one of my favorite things to tell people is that PKD is more common than Down syndrome, cystic fibrosis, muscular dystrophy, sickle cell anemia, hemophilia, and Huntington's disease combined. And my feeling is that, and it knows no race or it affects men and women equally. There's no boundaries on, there's no common denominator. There's 650,000 Americans and 12.5 million worldwide who have PKD, and there is no cure. The only treatment is dialysis or a transplant. And my feeling, my husband always says it's because no one famous has PKD.
That's amazing. That type of a statistic and information is just incredible. Now, interestingly enough, you don't have it, but you have.
No, I was I won the genetic lottery pool. I was the only one in my family not to inherit the disease. And when we were I have two sisters, and when we were teenagers, our my uncle had died not long after my aunt died. And my grandmother died in the 1940s of the same disease, and I was named after my grandmother. And I remember being a teenager and everyone putting two and two together, realizing it was hereditary. So we were tested to see if we had the disease. And my mother was tested, too. She was the youngest of my grandmother's six children. And five of my grandmother's six children did develop PKD, and then my mother had three children, and two out of three of us have the disease. But I do remember when the test results came in, when we were teenagers, our parents sat us down and said the test results were in, and they were so happy because no one had the disease, when in fact, three out of four of us had PKD.
You bring a point out in your book right at the beginning that when your sister collapsed, when the PKD was really starting to affect her quite deeply. There were 38,000 people on the waiting list for a kidney, and today there's over 90,000 people waiting. Well, actually, no more than that, 106,000 by 210. Now, those are numbers that have escalated phenomenally. That's just amazing.
It is an amazing statistic of how many people just the sister that you're referring to was the one that in 1995 received a kidney transplant from the waiting list, and that was 38,000. My sister that I gave my kidney to, there were 90,000 on the list, and I think I actually looked this morning at the UNOS website, and there's over 117,000 waiting for a kidney. It's phenomenal, but a lot of it is due to the dramatic increase in diabetes in today's in the world today. There's especially with the amount of people who are waiting are suffering because they had kidney disease and didn't even know it because it is a silent disease.
Mm-hmm.
But
very interesting.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is that is very interesting. Now, one of the first people in your family that had it, and of course, people, when they're diagnosed with this, they may have to go on dialysis. And dialysis is quite a process. We had a member of our family who, in his 70s, had to go in for dialysis, and it was quite an uncomfortable situation because his kidneys were failing. And that was something that took him in a very short period of time, and the average, I was told, is 5 years when someone's on dialysis, but your mom was on dialysis for 10 years.
Yes, she was, and you're right. You bring up wonderful facts about dialysis. It is a difficult life, but it also is an amazing gift that we have to save us, because my grandmother did not have dialysis, and also my aunt, who died at age 45 because there was a waiting list. So I hope my book brings hope to people who are on dialysis. I have one woman came up to me that had bought the book, and she told me that she has pages marked that she takes with her when she's having a rough day on dialysis because she wants to remember. She said that the book and the stories, because we're just a big Irish Catholic family with a great sense of humor, and mm-hmm. I wrote the book to honor them and to show people how far we've come in the world of dialysis and transplantation just in my lifetime.
Oh, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. When I think what's evolved just since this member of our family passed away, when the dialysis was no longer working for him, and he's been gone, my goodness, a good 10 years or more, and your book brings out so much information about what is available today. I loved your story about Sister Mike. I just thought it was just a hoot. You have to share with my listeners about your family member, Sister Mike, the nun.
Sister Mike was my mother's oldest sister, and she was the first one of my grandmother's siblings to develop PKD. And she was a Roman Catholic nun, but she wasn't typical at all. She loved John Wayne movies, she liked to drink beer, and she loved to swim. And she was just full of fun, and everybody that knew her loved her, and when she entered the room, she lit up the room, and she just was everything you wouldn't expect in a Roman Catholic nun. And yet, when her kidneys began to fail, she was not able to, dialysis was new, and it was exorbitantly expensive. It was not covered by Medicare, and she decided that she would not put her name on the waiting list because there were not enough machines, as I mentioned before. So she mm-hmm. called her brothers and sisters together and said, I've decided not to put my name on the list because I don't think the convent should go to the exorbitant expense, and I also do not think that the money should be spent on me. It should go toward children and their education, because she was a teacher. So mm-hmm. she lived her faith, and she was my favorite person on earth at the time. I was a young girl. I still get choked up over her story because it really was what helped me get through my decision to help my sister, because she taught me faith. And I always tell people, everything we do every day teaches those who come after us, or those around us, or those of our friends. And she certainly did that for me. And she died at age 45. And the week before she died, she gave me a typewriter, mm-hmm. which was a really extravagant gift in those days. And she told me to make her proud. So I feel like I was destined to tell their stories. And I didn't know it at the time, but it hit me on the head, like when you get one of those light bulb moments.
Mm-hmm. Now, your mom, she was 10 years on dialysis, and she was one of the fortunate ones. She was able to get a transplant, and that enabled her to stay, to live a full life for another 15 years. So because of medical
technology, she was able to see her grandchildren grow up, yes. And she mm-hmm. was, I remember visiting her one day on dialysis, and she had her arm outstretched and hooked up to that machine, and her blood was pumping through all the various tubes in a dialysis machine. And I remember walking in to sit with her, and she said, she goes, oh, Susie, I'm so lucky, I'm so blessed, and I'm thinking, here's this woman attached to this machine. And she said, with the death of each of my brothers and sisters, medical science learned something to save me. Mm-hmm. And you're right, she didn't seek a transplant for a while because she was terrified, because transplants were new back then, and the medications given weren't as effective as they are today. They didn't know how much medicine to give and how much not to, so that it organ wouldn't be rejected. So I wanted all of my mother and her amazing sibling stories to be out there and never to be forgotten, so that someone facing kidney disease today knows how blessed we are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Joanne, your sister, you relate many of her experiences. that she went through when it was found out that she had the disease. And it was quite poignant because when she was in the hospital on first dialysis, and of course your mom had been on dialysis for a number of years, and she related an experience, and I'll quote it directly from your book. It was the strangest thing what happened. When they took me down to dialysis on the hospital gurney, they wheeled me from my room and they left me in another little room for a minute before I went to dialysis. The only other person in the room was a woman sitting in a chair. I was scared. I was laying there all alone. I kept talking to Mom in heaven, telling her I'd be brave, asking her if she could believe this was really happening. A nurse walked into the room and said, "Joan." The other woman in the room stood up and left. A minute later, they came to get her for dialysis. And she said she couldn't understand why she was put in the little room to wait, but it was weird. And they found out that there had not been another woman in the room, correct?
Correct. That is what I call a God wink in my book. We're mm-hmm. Irish Catholic, and we believe in leprechauns. So the fact that we believe that God winks at us, we really do. Little miracles or coincidences. There are so many things that happened to my family and to me, which we call God winks, and they're incidents like what happened to Joanne. To this day, she felt like it was my mom telling her, "Hey, we're with you. You can do this. We're watching over you. There's a reason for all this, and you'll find out someday." And the same thing happened to my mother. The day my mother collapsed from PKD, she was taken to the hospital again, emergency situation, and it was the anniversary of Sister Mike's death. And our mother completely believed that that was Sister Mike's way of saying to her, "I'm looking out for you, I'm here." And then my mother went through she had a really tough life. She suffered a lot those 10 years on dialysis. She had everything thrown in the book at her that she could battle, and she battled it courageously. But when she did finally receive a kidney transplant, it was on St. Patrick's Day in the city of Chicago, where they dye the river green. And my mother opened one eye in the hospital afterwards, after the surgery, and she said, "Now, if that isn't the biggest God wink, that I should receive a kidney transplant on St. Patrick's Day because we're so obnoxiously Irish."
In your book, you have some wonderful photos of your family, but one that is especially significant is with a PKD kidney and the difference between that kidney and a normal kidney. It looks like something out of a Star Trek horror film. This is just almost unbelievable to believe that to see that this is what would be in the body, what this
disease
does.
It is horrific, isn't it? And the reason I put it in there, because it picture packs such a powerful impact, but a normal kidney weighs about 10 to 12 ounces, and a PKD kidney can weigh up to 20 pounds each. And our sister in Chicago, and most people don't understand, we have a picture of my two sisters and myself, and I'm in the middle, and it says three sisters, seven kidneys between them, because each of my sisters have three kidneys, and I have one kidney. And most people don't understand that the PKD kidney is still within them. And
really? It's
usually
not removed.
No, they don't remove them because sometimes now they do remove them. But the reason they didn't when my mother received her transplant and my other sister, well, both of my sisters, was because they were in such critical condition they couldn't withstand the removal of two kidneys and the surgery for the new kidney. It's just they wouldn't have made it through that kind of an operation.
Amazing. Amazing.
And my sister in that lives in Chicago now, her kidney transplant was 18 years ago, and the thing that one of our PKD friends always says is a kidney transplant is just a Band-Aid. People with polycystic kidney disease still have the disease. And so she's battling some problems now that are associated with the disease. And the doctors have told us that each of her kidneys weigh 14 pounds each, her PKD kidneys.
Oh, my gracious. That is just amazing. So it's actually evolving towards the other ones. So it's just keeping, it expands into the new kidney that's put in there.
The new kidney is never affected by PKD. It's just that her old kidneys, the cysts are growing so bit large now they're just pushing against the other organs. And many people, or many doctors, do end up having to remove the diseased kidney. But again, Donna, people don't want to have surgery because of the risk of infection. And if you have infections, you risk losing a transplanted kidney, which is, you know, they don't grow on trees. I think I don't mention that in my book. It's very hard to receive a transplanted kidney. It's the greatest gift you can receive. There's just not enough donors.
Absolutely true. Well, I do know that they're working with cellular technology to take healthy tissue and perhaps grow organs for people. And
yes, that would be phenomenal. No one would have to be a living donor. I always say my mission is to first find a cure for PKD because it's a horrific disease, and it's in our fifth generation, and I feel like that being that I am the one that did not inherit the disease, I have a personal responsibility to use my good fortune to tell our stories. And I did get that typewriter as a gift. But you're right. There has been great progress made in genetics testing and in hopefully growing a new kidney from tissue.
Yes, from living tissue, living healthy tissue, and they only need a small part. And so there are tests and things that have been done over the last 20 years that show that there is a way of doing it. But like anything else, it's a process before it is really going to be accepted. Your mom was quite a special gal, and your stories about your family are funny, and the ones about you are funny, because your mother always told you needed to be more flexible. You needed to bend a little more. You were someone that was very, very stiff and rigid in many of your attitudes, and you absolutely hated being around sick people.
Well, I associated that with PKD and with death, and you're right. It was a journey to learn quite a few things about myself, too. And I wasn't getting along with my sister Joanne, and I really had to look long and hard at myself. I realized that when you're sick, you're not yourself, and I think I have a sentence in my book saying illness brings you to your knees.
Mm-hmm.
I just have such an incredible family, and I love the fact that the book will cause you to really reflect on organ donation. It's a great book club book. You can really have a lively discussion, and it would help you. A lot of people write to me and say, I don't think I could give my sister a kidney or my brother a kidney, but I could give my husband a kidney. And it's just interesting to see. It makes you think, and it sure made me think, and I learned an awful lot about myself, and I learned how blessed it is to be loved for just who you are, and to battle the faults within me. So it was a great journey, and it completely changed me.
I can imagine. Now, your husband Bill, you just have some wonderful stories about him and his patience with you and all of the inner challenges you went through and putting up with the family, because your family is a very feisty one. And I loved your mother's attitude when she was in the hospital, she noticed that the patients who were feisty and demanding usually recovered and walked out of the hospital. She said they may have made the nurses' lives miserable, but they recovered. She said the docile ones were the ones who croaked. If they were quiet and no trouble, they left the hospital feet first. She said, fight for your rights. If you're ever a patient, girls, it's your body, and no one knows it better than you. Wow, your mom was really way ahead of the curve as far as understanding patients' rights and advocacy.
She was a very wise woman, and she was a really a feisty old broad, I guess you'd say. She'd love to be called a feisty broad, too. She was a blessing.
She is quite a woman. I think your family, you have just given a phenomenal gift, not only to those that read the story, but also to your family, because I think that being open and honest about this and talking about all of the challenges that various family members have gone through, what you gained from it, how you went through the surgery, what your response was, and how your sister ended up having a life because of your kidney donation. It's very, very powerful. Now, you have a website called thereluctantdonor.com, and the picture on the cover of the book really is quite amazing because it shows a very simple silver chain with a kidney, a red kidney, on the end of the chain. What's your website, dear? This is thereluctantdonor.com?
Yes.
And what will they find on that website?
They can order the book on the website, and they can find out contacts. So if they want to know how to become an organ donor, there's a they can download a list of questions for book clubs. And the necklace that is on the cover that you mentioned was a gift from our South African friend who you read about in the book, the gift from who brought us the necklace before the surgery. And then the picture, that's our oldest daughter.
Ah, well, the cover is just absolutely, absolutely fabulous. So I just want my audience to know that life has many different realities and perspectives to it. And sometimes we can give a gift to someone else. And maybe on your driver's license, if you want to be an organ donor, check that box if this is something that you feel you would like to contribute to. Many times we don't like to think about those things, but it can make a difference. And you'll find out about the people who, because they passed away, their organs went to saving the lives of members of Suzanne Ruff's family. Not only did she contribute, but so did these other families as well. The Reluctant Donor, Suzanne Ruff, is the author. Go to her website, thereluctantdonor.com. Suzanne Ruff, I wish you the best, and thank you so much for sharing your time with us today.
Oh, thank you. It was my pleasure to be with you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call into if you would like to chat with me today. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. The telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. For those of you in the state of Washington, Western Washington especially, there's a marvelous event coming up on Saturday, March the 30th. That is the Emerald Spiral Expo. And we will be having someone chatting with us later on, but not today, but on another day, about this wonderful event. But I have been a part of this for so many years, and it is just a wonderful, cozy type of an affair. It's a psychic expo, but it's much more than that. There's all kinds of services and products there. It's being held on the Kent Commons in Kent, Washington. It's a great way to spend your Saturday and to actually have a chance to talk with people of different talents, offering different services and products. It's a wonderful, intimate show, and it's one that if you come in, stop on by, say hello, because I love to chat with those of you that do come by. And I'll be there doing many consultations, and I'll have Buku books there as well. So check out EmeraldSpiralExpo.com, EmeraldSpiralExpo.com, and you then will find out where to park, all kinds of good things. Plenty of parking, by the way, lots of free parking. And it's from 9 to 5 on Saturday, March the 30th. I hope you'll be able to join. Anyway, telephone number to call in to me is 888-627-6008. Money Pit. Yes, I know that there was a movie about a money pit. Well, this is a different kind of a money pit. Have you ever heard of Oak Island? Well, I had, and there's so much in the way of stories about this. Now, how is it that Oak Island became so famous? Why is it that treasure hunters still go there to see if they can find something exceptional that'll make them wealthy so they'll never have to work another day of their lives? It all started in about 1795. With three teenagers, if you can believe it. They had rode out to Oak Island, and this is off of Nova Scotia. They were going to go there for a picnic. Now, while they were there, you know how it is with kids. They're always out hunting and looking for different things. They love to explore. They discovered an old ship's tackle block hanging from a tree, and there was a deep and wide depression in the ground, and so they decided to dig. Now, that began a treasure hunt that's still going on. Six people have died because of this treasure that nobody's found, and millions and millions and millions of dollars have been spent by those that believe there is something incredibly special there. Now, it became christened the Money Pit because of the millions that have been lost. And engineering, well, it's been quite amazing. Here's some of the history about the Money Pit. 1795, 10, 20, 30 feet below the Earth's surface, they found oak platforms sealed with ship's putty and coconut fiber. Mm-hmm, that's right. 1804, an off-island stone with cryptic symbols was discovered 90 feet down into this pit. 1804, they believe they found a treasure. But when they were ready to retrieve it, the money pit started filling with water. Couldn't be bailed out. There was a flood tunnel which started from an artificial beach at an adjacent place called Smith's Cove that had been linked with the shaft that they were digging in. So what do? They dig a parallel shaft. It got flooded too. 1861, a man died because a steam pump's boiler exploded. 1897, they found a hidden cement chamber and parchment scrap. That's right. somebody else died in 1897. 1958, a man by the name of Fred Nolan recorded the location of artifacts, white stones, and boulders that had holes chiseled into them. These items had been laid out on a grid. 1959, Bob Riestall, who was a former circus stunt rider, he wanted to do an excavation. However, in 1963, Bob, his son, and two other workers were overcome by exhaust fumes from a generator, and they all died. 1965, Texan Bob Dunfield, he destroyed so much because he was trying to use heavy-duty equipment. So he went in and wiped out all kinds of things. Did he get the treasure? Mm-mm. In 1971, a video camera was sent down a new shaft. It was called Borehole 10X, and they saw a severed hand. Now, there's a legend about Oak Island. The legend is that a search for treasure will end only after all the island's oaks are dead, and seven fortune seekers with them. By 1990, six diggers had died. Three oaks still remain. An amazing story. Where did the legend come from? Who knows? But just another little bit of historical trivia. I find these things so interesting because whoever had put this treasure or whatever it was that they had felt that they should be able to get to at some later date, who knows when it was put down there? Maybe in the 1700s, could have been in the 1600s, who knows? We don't. But we may never know. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Okay, I promised you a recipe yesterday, and I gave you the ingredients for it, but I couldn't. We had a caller, and I just couldn't get to finishing the rest of the recipe, so bear with me. I'm going to repeat it from the beginning, and if you have a pad of paper and a pen, it's great. This is a cream of roasted tomato soup, and there's nothing like using, you know, tomatoes. And if you had fresh tomatoes, it might take you a little bit longer to get this done, but you would have to peel the tomatoes. So what's an easier way to go? Using canned tomatoes, where all of that work has been done for you. So let me give you the ingredients, because this is so good, and it's delicious with a salad, as I said yesterday, with, you know, freshly baked bread, and then you save those extra calories for dessert, if you like. Now, this is what it is. It's a can, 28 ounces of whole tomatoes. You want to drain them. You reserve your juice now. You don't toss the juice out. You have 4 tablespoons of olive oil, and know that this is going to be divided up as we go along in the recipe. You're going to need 1 teaspoon of crushed Italian spices, salt and ground pepper. You're going to need, you'll use that to taste. You need 1/4 cup of finely minced onion, 3 tablespoons of tomato paste, 2 tablespoons of flour, 1/2 to 1 teaspoon of sugar. You might need a little bit of extra sugar, dependent on the acidity of the tomatoes. 1/4 teaspoon pumpkin pie spice, but that surprised you, or 1/8 teaspoon of ground allspice, 2 cups of a chicken broth, 1 cup of heavy cream, and this is how simple this is. You're going to cut your drained tomatoes in half, remove the seeds, place the tomatoes on a baking pan lined with aluminum foil. You take your olive oil, your Italian spices, add a little salt and pepper, put it in a small bowl, and you mix it to blend. Now, you're going to brush this oil mixture over your tomatoes. You roast them in the oven for about 30 minutes at 375 degrees. Now, the tomatoes will begin to caramelize. They're going to get that delicious brown look to them, slightly brown. You don't want them real dark. Then you take those tomatoes, oil, and herbs from the pan, put it into a food processor, scrape it out of the pan with a rubber spatula. You're going to process for about 1 minute, but you don't want to puree it. You want it sort of a little chunky. And you add your remaining olive oil and onion to a saucepan. Sauté the onion until it's tender. You don't want it brown. You want the onion tender. You'd stir in to that mixture your tomato paste, your flour, your sugar, and pumpkin pie spice, and you cook it for 2 minutes over medium-high heat. You stir it constantly because you don't want it to burn. Gradually stir in your broth, the reserved tomato juice, and your roasted tomato sauce. Cook until it's heated. You don't boil it. You can strain the mixture if you want, but you don't have to. It has a different texture to it. If you want it strained, put it through a sieve, and then with your heavy cream, you take a little bit of the tomato mixture and blend it. And then you take that partially warmed cream mixture, add it to the saucepan, stir to mix it well. There it is. It's all ready to go. And if you want, you can just use a particular spice, like if you love oregano or basil. But if you have a mixture of the spices, fennel seed is wonderful with this. So have fun with it. This is delicious. It's easy. And again, if you're going to use fresh tomatoes, then just be aware that you have to peel them first. And you're going to need to add a little bit of extra broth. This would perhaps, you might want to try it if you're a vegetarian, instead of using a meat broth. You can try it with beef broth or vegetable broth, whatever works for you. We've got a caller on the line. Caller, thank you for waiting. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
My name is Brian. I'm calling from San Juan Capistrano.
Oh, hi, Brian. Welcome to the show. Let me give you my information, and then you're welcome to ask me a question. Now, Brian, we will be taking a real short break in about 2.5 minutes. Just want to give you a heads up on that. What I want to say to you, Brian, right off the bat is, yes, you do have an agitation physically that is bothering you, but I want you to do some homework on this, because I believe that there's going to be a way of getting rid of the discomfort that is not going to require anything really, really unusual. So I'm not able to tell right now exactly what's going on, but it looks like it has something to do with the intestinal tract and or the lower bowel. So it could be something so simple as changing your diet. But you want to be sure you do your homework, because you're going to be surprised at some options that you can work with that are going to assist you to keep your body in a harmonic balance the way that you want. Now, there's a high level of stress that I'm seeing you going through, and you're not quite sure how to resolve a particular challenge that's in front of you right at the moment. Seems to be involving some money, but there is resolution, and you need to know that. That resolution is going to come about because of action that you are going to take, and I want to say you want to be sure that you get all of your facts together so that you assume nothing. You assume nothing. You get all of your facts together and then talk with someone that can give you some good insight on how to handle the details, and those details will make all the difference in the world. So don't get angry or upset over what you don't know. Find out the facts so that you can resolve it fairly easily. We're taking a break for just a minute, Brian. Will you stay with me, and then I'll take your question?
Yes.
All right, sir. This is Donna Sebo. We have Brian on the phone. If you'd like to give me a call, 888-627-6008. We'll be right back.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604. Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Brian, are you still with me?
Yes.
All right, sir. What's your question for me today?
Do you think I'll be moving out of the state of California maybe within a year or two?
Well, there are some things that you need to settle before you relocate. And I would like to see you, when you're ready to relocate, really having a clean slate so that you don't have unnecessary costs. You need to make a very careful evaluation about where you want to go so that you'll be able to enjoy the lifestyle that you want. Where were you thinking of moving to, Brian? I'm looking at a climate that's warm, yet you seem to be in a seasonal kind of an environment. It reminds me of Colorado, certain areas of New Mexico. Where were you thinking of moving to?
Either Arizona or back up to Washington State.
Okay. Well, I do think you need the sunshine. So when I was looking at the states, I was looking at the southwestern area, and I'm seeing a seasonal patterning. This is something you really need to think about very, very carefully. I do think that being up in Washington, dependent on whether you're on the east side or the west side, it all depends on how you want to work with it. Because as you know, we've got a lot of liquid gold here in western Washington because that's where I'm located. So the sun seems to have a very powerful impact on you. And I think you should give that consideration, and also you want to be sure that you are in an environment that allows you to integrate with those environments of people that you really, really enjoy spending time with.
Okay, thank you.
You are very welcome. Take care now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6. 008. Okay, how about a spring horoscope for those of you under the sign of Libra, Scorpio, and Sagittarius? And again, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. This is all lighthearted stuff. I just love doing it. This is so much fun. For those of you that are born under the sign of Libra, guess what? Things are going to be shaken up a little bit. There's going to be a lot of activity. Don't be surprised if you have quite a bit of change that evolves this spring. And it's going to cause changes throughout the year. Now, if you are looking for romance, be patient because it's not just going to fall into your lap, so to speak. You are going to find that you need to keep your eyes open. Don't let the desire for having Mr. Wonderful or Ms. Wonderful in your life blind you to the reality of personalities that you're going to be encountering. Now, what if you've had, a dream of doing something special? Well, believe it or not, this is a wonderful time of the year to do your homework, to really look at what you would like to do. Take time and just spend some time with yourself. Figure out what it is that really means the most to you. Self-examination is always worth doing, but I think more than anything else, when it comes to economics and maybe you're doing something that in a job that's really not your passion, well, explore what your options could be and start laying the groundwork for shifting into another modality. But this is the time not necessarily to make the shift, but to make the preparation for the shift. Perhaps you need to go back to school, something like that. So be aware. And you know what? Money seems to be flowing in around you. It's not coming in heavy duty, but it is there, and there's consistency with it. So your finances are going to be stable for those of you under the sign of Libra. Scorpio, well, my goodness, you've got to have patience. And Scorpios usually are not very patient. They want to get things done. They want it day before yesterday. Well, you're going to find that patience is going to be the big word in your environment during the month of spring, and tying up loose ends is a big deal. You're really going to be working hard as far as career goes, motivating yourself, saying, I really want to make some shifts and changes, and so it's up to me. So personal responsibility is going to be very strong in your arena, and because of that, you're going to find that not only is your money going to be stable, but you actually might move forward if you have a good financial plan and find yourself doing quite well financially. Now, don't be surprised if you have someone from the past pop up in your life that you've not seen for years. It reminds me of my meeting someone after 33 years after not seeing them for so long. And all of a sudden, poof, there they are. Phone call out of the blue and a meeting within a very short period of time afterwards. It can happen to you, too. Those of you born under the sign of Sagittarius, your family is going to be your focus. That's right. And don't be surprised if there's a lot of interaction with members of family or issues coming up with members of family. This is just something that you're going to be experiencing during the spring, and in many ways, you enjoy the traditions of the season that come with spring, and you love being out of doors. So I'm just seeing you really, really enjoying visiting new places, maybe taking a few short excursions, and having a good time with it. Now, you might find yourself having some news about a member of your family deciding to bring a baby into the world, and by golly, that is going to bring a significant change. Success and money, you're going to work for everything you get this year. Nothing's easy, but I'll tell you what, you're also going to be of a mindset where you know what it is that you want, and you're going to be exploring what it is that you can do to attain those objectives and goals so that you can reach those dreams that you have in that professional world that you desire so much to be a part of. Donna Sebo here. That's the three signs. Tomorrow we'll do Cancer, Leo, and Virgo if we have the opportunity. And again, if you want to give me a chat, give me a call to chat, 888-627-6008. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Robert Hammond. Now, this is all about, well, being ready. And I think you're going to find what Robert Hammond has to share being very, very valuable. So we are going to be chatting with him, and then we've got a great lineup next week. We're going to be talking about how to take charge of your talents. We're going to be talking with Perry and Dawn, and these two professional people really like to focus on individual talents so that you can really evolve into the arena of work environment, hobby maybe, that is going to be especially meaningful to you. The new human, Joshua Winner. And we are going to be learning about quantum touch healing. Anybody can do it, and he's going to show us how. Meadow Lynn is a woman that loves food, and a mystic cookbook has been put together that is just fabulous. All kinds of wonderful, wonderful things in it. Not just recipes, but tidbits of insight and wisdom that I know you'll enjoy. Friends Indeed. D-E-E-D. That's right. This is going to be about Quakers, the history of Quakers, and we're going to be talking with Susan Sachs Goldman, and then Steve Roth, phenomenal book about medical discoveries. Now, interestingly, it's titled, And Nothing Happened, But You Can Make It Happen. We're going to be talking about medical discoveries that were made at the turn of the 20th century that worked for all kinds of conditions and ailments. This isn't witch doctor woo-woo-woo-woo. This is fact. And I think you'll find it very interesting. So we've got a great lineup of guests, and all of the information regarding my various guests, little bits of points, are on the website. Check out the button, Show Information. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Thank you so much for sharing this time with me. I look forward to having you join me again tomorrow. Tell your friends. We've got a lot of good stuff to share on the Donna Sebo Show. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.